I'm sitting in the home of Grover Sanderson and his son Jack in San Francisco. Grover, will you introduce yourself?
I am known as Chief Eagle Wing, a Karuk Indian from the Klamath River country in Northern California. I was born at Panamnik, and my son was born in Los Angeles, California. And when he was 6 months old, I had a dinner, and I invited many old people of Indian from the different tribes came to my house, and I asked the old men, I said, I would like to have an Indian name for my son. And one old man, he was 80 years of age, he got up and said, why, I'm getting pretty old now. I think I should like to transfer my name. And his name was Red Turtle, and I accepted his offer, and I named my son Red Turtle, and here's Red Turtle now.
You said you were from Panamnik, Grover.
Panamnik, yeah. Panamnik means the valley place. That's in my Karuk language. Panamnik is now known as Orleans, Humboldt County, California.
Whereabouts in Humboldt County is that?
It's in the northeast corner of Humboldt County.
It's on the river?
On the Klamath River. There, in ancient times, we had great ceremonies. We had the white deerskin dance. We had the regeneration jump dance. It is now called jump dance because when the white man first saw our people doing this great dance, they sort of hopped in a way that the white man called it jump dance. But to our people, it's the great ceremony. It's a regeneration ceremony, and it has to be done by great prayers to the Great Spirit in order to make the dance possible.
Well, Red Turtle, I understand that you and your father have done quite a bit of research into California and other Indian ways. Could you tell us something of what you've done?
Well, Frank, we've I should say that my father has been doing research work among not only the California Indians, but most of the Indians, the outstanding tribes throughout the United States. However, he felt when he graduated from Sherman Institute in Riverside, California, which was a government school, that the Indian people were too quickly forgetting their Indian ways, their cultures, their backgrounds, and so he set out at that time to make a permanent record. And of course, after I was born, I traveled a great deal with my father throughout the United States, studying the different Indian tribes. And we have, in later years, concentrated on the California Indians.
Eagle Wing, then you've been around to most of the tribal groups in the United States. Could you tell us how the dances and ceremonies of the California Indians compare to these other groups?
There's quite a bit difference, Frank. The Indians in the East Coast practically forgotten their original Indian dances or their original Indian ceremonies, because all North American Indian started their ceremonies by prayer to the Great Spirit. And it was shown, from my feeling and knowing my own people, that all Indians originally were shown by the Great Spirit how to live on this continent, and they offered prayers in even their songs, their dances, and the food that they received. Back in Minnesota, I found the longhouse dances still going on there, but they offer manufactured things where they had, they used to give away Indian canoes, Indian beadwork, Indian baskets. But I was sorry to see calico silks for offering to the Great Spirit there. Then I came west into North Dakota. There, I came upon the Sundance ceremony there, way back in 1932. And I told the chief there that I was doing this to perpetuate our culture, for school children, for people who did not understand the Indian race. But the medicine man told me I had to fast before I could go into his lodge to talk to him. So I did fast. I fasted for 3 days, and I made motion pictures of their great ceremony, the Great Sundance, which is now gone forever. And I have it in films at the present time. Then I came on out west through Montana. I talked to various Blackfoot Indians. And I came out west into Idaho. There are Blackfoot Indians out there too, but the western Blackfeet. Then I came down to the Klamath, up around the Klamath Lakes. They are a distant relative of our people because that's the headwaters of the Klamath River.
That's up in Oregon.
That's in Oregon. That's near Clear Lake.
Crater Lake.
That's Crater Lake. Well, Klamath, the seepage from Crater Lake goes into the Klamath Lake proper. Then the outlet of that water is the headwaters of the Klamath River.
Oh.
So I came on down the Klamath River to Happy Camp. There I talked with my own people, the Karuk Indian, of which I speak the Karuk language. I said, Ayuki Hootkich, and they are Urayau. They just were so glad because I could talk to my own people, and then I understood the Indian language I didn't forget while I was going to school.
What you said means good to see you?
Greetings.
Oh, greetings.
Ayuki is greetings. Urayau, I am feeling very fine. So, I came to Clear Creek. That's along the Klamath River there. There was an ancient Indian village there at one time, and they had just begun to do the ancient white deerskin dance there. And I took part in and that was the last dance. And my little son, who was 6 years of age at that time, Red Turtle, who is now a man, he took part in it also. And they asked me to sing the White Deerskin Dance song there. Would you like to hear this White Deerskin Dance?
Yeah, I'd like very much. First, tell us a little bit about the White Deerskin Dance.
Well, the White Deerskin Dance, it's only one white deer born every 50 years. And when our people was making up the civilization of the Karuk Indians, they inculcated this white deer skin dance in their civilization. It was a prayer in thankfulness for plenty of food that they had, the deer meat, they had the salmon in the river, they had the sweet potatoes, they had the acorns in the mountains, they had many edible berries all through the woods. And in all, this great dance was made up in ancient times, possibly 20,000 years ago. They quoted 5,000 years that they had perpetuated this white deerskin dance. Because I listened to the medicine man or the priest who was speaking the formula, and he said that we had perpetuated this dance for 5,000 years, and that was the last dance there at Clear Creek along the Klamath River in Siskiyou County.
Is this pretty true throughout California Eagle Wing, that the old ways are gradually dropping off as older people pass away?
That's right. It seems like the old people know the old formula, the ancient words that was taught to them by the Great Spirit, or when they learned the sounds. And they put everything meant, everything was relation to man, the birds, bees, waters, trees, everything. And it seemed like they put this all together in order to make these ceremonies. And of course, the young people do not understand that, and they have taken on the white man's civilization, and they're losing, or they cannot comprehend the old people to understand the ancient language of the Indian, the Karuk, the Yuruk, the Hoopas. They're losing the ancient meaning of our language.
Well, before we hear the white deerskin dance from you, Eagle Wing, I'd like to ask Red Turtle. Your father says that the younger people are forgetting the old ways and they're not learning them, but you're somewhat different there, aren't you?
Well, yes, I suppose it's because of my father's interest in the work and his years spent in the research that I became interested. I was raised for a good deal of time with my great-great-aunt, Nainari, and she was very instrumental in teaching me many of the old Indian customs. And I have taken part since I was about 5 years old in some of the our own tribal dances. I sing the songs. I know the dances. As I say, I've taken part in them. I know their meanings, and in fact, it's so much so now that in collaboration with my father, I'm going to write a book that I hope will be used for all groups, more informative, staying away from the theories the mechanics of the North American Indian, more or less making it a book that will appeal to all groups.
Well, I'd be interested in seeing that when it comes out. I remember seeing you last July up at Hoopa during the brush dances.
I had a lot of fun.
You were out there jumping in the middle.
I really enjoyed it.
Well, Eagle Wing, will you tell us some more about this white deerskin dance? Would you describe, for instance, how long does it last and how many people do the dance? And what goes on during it?
It takes the priest goes to several stations in the mountains there at Panamnik. There are several stations where he prays to the Great Spirit. The ninth day, he comes down before the people that had gathered along the river, great bonfires along the river. Many dugout canoes come from the various different tribes, like the Yuraks come up the river, and the Karuks come down the river from way up there. I've seen, and when I was a boy, many canoes, 100 canoes with provisions, all landed along the Klamath River there for this great ceremony, the white deerskin dance.
That was in the last part of the last century.
1912.
Oh, that...
Way back in 1912. Oh. That's the last dance at Panamnik at Orleans. Mm-hmm. And, Frank, I will show you the pictures. I have the pictures of the white deerskin dance here, the last dance at Orleans. Well, my people were very proud people, and fortunately, I am a descendant from Ikfinipa. Ikfinipa was the head chief at Panamnik, and he's the one that signed the treaty with Representative President Fillmore when he sent commissioners out here too. Mm-hmm. And he signed his thumbprint on that document, selling or promising us that they would give us schools, give us land to live like the white man. We're still waiting for it.
Mm, yeah. You're not alone there. All the Indians of California are waiting. Well, tell me, this white deerskin dance, how many people take part in it, Eagle Wing?
Anywhere from 12 to 36.
And how are they dressed?
They're dressed in the tanned deer skins, and they carry the white deer skin. They're great taxidermists, the Karuk Indians and the Yurok Indians. They were great taxidermists. They stuffed the deer, tanned the deer, and they stuffed the heads. They trimmed the ears with woodpecker heads, throats of hummingbirds, the green mallard heads, the eagle feathers, the dentellium shells, the abalone shells, and it made it just sing when they carried this white deer skin on a pole. Looked like a live white deer, only trimmed in those beautiful feathers. They have usually in the center in a row, they have one black deer, pure black deer in the center, and then two white ones on the side, and the rest of them could be gray, red, or dark, or partially, but they could not be just a common, ordinary deer skin. They have to be different. They have to be half white or part black, or something like that, because that's the only ones they picked. They must have taken them 5,000 years in order to gather these things, these especially nature's way of producing the black and white deer. And our people worship the deer. They pray when they go hunt. They don't take the deer just by like killing them for sport. They use it for great ceremony and for food and for clothing. Their moccasins. They sewed their moccasins. Use the buckskin thong to sew up their moccasins. Use the neck of the deer for the soles. They use the horns to flake their flint with. They use every part of the deer.
Well, in this dance, the white deerskin dance, don't they use obsidian blades?
The obsidian blades is carried. That was part of the white deer ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
In using the flint to make fire, to take the life of the deer, they have great blades that they carry. And they also have the whistle that they carry in front of this great white deerskin dance. They carry it back and forth, and it's going to be done. It's going to be done this year again. I have the eagle whistle here someplace, and I just want to show you that the Indians have made it so that there is an eagle whistle.
Oh yeah, now that's and made out of the
bones of the eagle.
Oh, yeah.
And it sounds just like an eagle when you blow on it. That's the way the eagle sounds.
Hmm.
And that's the eagle bones that they use. Well, each stone carrier in front of the great white deerskin dance carries in their mouth this eagle whistle. And they keep time with the singers. Three singers usually sing in the center of the deerskin dance. And they sing such beautiful songs, it's comparable with the opera that they have today. The Indian people developed beautiful rhythm, and the songs were beautiful because they got it from the wind, the running of waters, the sighing of the winds, and all nature's sounds, birds and bees. They got created their songs.
The Indian people were a very religious people, weren't they?
Yes, they were. They offered a prayer for everything they took. If they took a life, they offered a prayer. For instance, at home along the Klamath River, the first salmon that comes up the river, they throw it back into the river. The first one they catch, they throw it back, an offering to the Great Spirit.
Hmm. Well, could you sing one of the White Deerskin songs?
Yes, I could, but my son will help me out in singing the songs. This is a group song, usually three singers, and the rest of them keep time. Now, just imagine 36 people dancing and nine singers.
They're dancing in a row.
In a row, and all singing and dancing and keeping time. It makes a beautiful sound through the woods.
But holding the white deer skins
holding
up
the white
on
deer
long
skins
sticks
at the same time. Yes.
Yeah. Well, would you sing one? That's a very beautiful song. That's just part of it?
That's just a part of it. Now, they sing three times. Three times. The other one will pick it up, then they start in again. They sing three times. That's a set. Then another group comes in and sings three songs. Another group comes in. Different camps take up the time.
You know, we hear that the Indians in the Southwest have the real ceremonies and the real songs, but from what I've seen and heard of California songs and ceremonies, they even seem to be more interesting than those of Arizona and New Mexico.
I've taken motion pictures of the Arizona people.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the songs were very beautiful, but in that part of the country, it seems like they're too highly commercialized or being directed by people that don't know the authentic application like the Indians themselves do back in the villages. So they come forth there at Gallup, New Mexico, and they call the intertribal ceremonies there, but it's just probably just excerpts from their great ceremonies.
The California Indians also had legends, didn't they? I remember Red Turtle at the meeting that we had in October where the Commissioner of Indian Affairs was. You told one about a gambling game. I wonder, would you mind telling that one now, and then could you sing the song that goes with it?
Yes, I wouldn't mind at all. The fact is, that's one of my favorite stories. And before I tell the story, I'll have to give you some of the background on how these legends originate. The Indians felt in early times that before there were any people on Earth, there were only animals. And among the animals, they had one common language, and they could understand one another. And, of course, in the animal kingdom, there was Coyote. Now, Coyote was the mischief maker. The Indians call him Piknefich, which means war crier. That's the way he sounds when they hear him at night.
And Coyote, as I say, was the mischief maker. He could never be relied upon. He would say one thing and then he would do something else. In other words, he was a bad character. And you find Coyote cropping up quite frequently in the Klamath Indian legends. But this particular story I'm going to tell you is about the sucker and the eel. Now, one time the sucker and the eel were having a gambling game. And, of course, the suckerfish had been very, very lucky. He had won all of the eel's fine furs. He had won all of his wampum. He had even won the eel's house. And, of course, the eel was feeling very badly about this. And he said, after thinking and deliberating about it for a long time, he said, "Sucker, I'm going to play you one more game. And this time I bet you my bones I win this game." Well, they played, but as usual, the sucker won. And that's why the sucker has so many, many bones and the eel has none. But they sing, the Klamath Indians sing songs when they play this gambling game. Actually, it's not a gambling game, but a guessing game. And it's played with sticks and about 40 small sticks about 8 inches long. And one of the sticks has a black mark in the center of it. And, of course, these, they shuffle around in their hands in front of the other players. They kneel facing each other, and they mix them up. And, of course, then they hold them behind their backs, and it's up to the other person to guess which hand he has the black stick in. And while they do this, they sing songs. And each tribe, the Karuk, the Yurok, and the Hoopas, all three tribes from that area, each tribe has their own songs that they sing that they feel will bring them luck and, of course, help to add to the excitement and confusion of their opponent. This is one of the songs that they sing. Hey, yeah, yeah.
Dances are dying out. Can't something be done to keep them alive, to keep some of the fine tradition of California Indians?
Well, we've, Frank, have given this quite, well, some very serious thought. And in recent years, of course, I say recent, but as I think back, I mean, it's been quite a few years that we've been thinking about it, but have just not been able to get the right support and backing in a dream that we have. We hope that in some way, someplace here in California, there can be a living monument established, an Indian village where the ceremonial dances, the customs, their rituals, the way that they lived, their arts, their crafts, all of this can be witnessed, a permanent preservation, not only for generation now, but for future generations, so that they can see that the heritage of the first American, and especially here in California. I mean, we are very historically minded, and I believe that by establishing this living monument, it would attract tourist trade. I think that the Indians would benefit from it, as well as the state, the people in it. I think it would be a marvelous thing. But it's, as I say, it's a dream now, and we hope someday to make it a reality.
Well, we don't have time during this program to go into detail about your project, but we are going to have a second program, and I would like to spend about a third or maybe half of that talking just about this project you have for the future. But before we close this one, I was wondering if Grover, or Eagle Wing, pardon me, we could have one more song.
What kind of song would you like? We have many songs. And
how about a brush dance?
Brush dance, yes. Yeah.
Now, again, this is a group song.
This is a group also. They have, this is really a lodge dance. They dance inside of a lodge in a circle, and the men, women, and children dance in this dance. And usually, if there is some coming sports coming on the next day, they dance all night in this brush dance. If some sports coming along the next day, why they have this, the the sticks that they use in the fields, they bring this out in the middle of the dance and show this round and make a yells to challenge the other players, possibly from the other tribe. And usually they get their answer all right. And in this great brush dance ceremony or lodge dance, this is the song they sing. Hey, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, hey, yo, 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 hey, hey, yo,
very much Eagle Wing and Red Turtle, and I know my pronunciation isn't right, but I think that one of the most beautiful words for goodbye I've ever heard is chul. Is that how you say it?
Chimikuyapko.
Well, how do the Yurok say it?
It's the same.
Oh, well, what does shu mean? Chul.
Chul.
Yeah.
Well, that's same, all in more of a slang in there, so like, well, so long, or something like that.
Okay, we'll see you next time.